And today, we're part of an outstanding tradition. And one of the beauties of what we're doing for Advent, if you ever question, why do we randomly throw in liturgical calendars? Because often we don't follow the classic church calendar. And I'd like to open with a poem, because if anything helps express the human need, it's poetry. As you fall, remember that you are part of a beautiful story that did not start when you were born. Remember that you are the universe exhaling, a breeze waiting to blow across a field of tall grass. Remember, you are part of a beautiful story that did not start when you were born. As your body cuts through the air, think only of the things that made you smile, the people that made you love, the ideas that made you strong. Remember, those things will never happen again, but they cannot unhappen. Remember, you are part of a beautiful story that did not start when you were born. Remember, what you felt can never be taken away. Remember, you are part of a beautiful story that did not start when you were born, and it will not end when you die. Remember, that is the goal of the series. That is the goal of the Christian calendar, actually, is that we sit in the beautiful story and we remember that what we experience, what we feel, what we do, although yes, important and impactful for us, cannot be undone, so we get to remember. And so as we step into the Christian story and we start talking about hope, because that's the way we're theming this Advent, is hope. And over the next few weeks, it'll be hope embodied in love, hope embodied in joy and peace, until we get to have that Christmas celebration morning to say, this was our hope. And so I titled mine, yes, it is up. Hope is relational knowledge. Now, I say that because sometimes we can have hope and think of it as an abstraction. We say, I hope for something, almost in the same way we say, I wish for something. I hope I win the lottery. I hope, and this was my favorite because being raised in the church, we get a lot of really awkward relational situations. Usually when a new person came in, it was, I really hope she likes me. It's like, you never even went up and said hi. It's like, I know, but she's the one. She doesn't realize it yet, but it's here. She feels it from me in the back row. Exactly. And that's the way we speak of hope. It's this fantasy reality. It's intangible. It's kind of out here-ness. But hope is relational knowledge because hope needs an object. And so I'd actually like to say, in line with that relational stance, Brittany and I, when we got together, I operated in hope, mainly because I'm very impulsive. And so we spent the first summer that we knew each other 5-6 days a week around each other telling everyone we are not dating. We just are always around each other, but this is not a date. And we were adamant to the point everyone laughed at us. When I went back to Boston, because at the time I was in grad school in Boston for religious studies, I would gamble with my dinner money, with my rent, in order to get a plane ticket that would go from Boston to Michigan to Georgia to Seattle to Colorado to LA to Sacramento near where Brittany lived, because it saved me $35, then I could afford it. I spent, I think my best was 17 hours to cover a 4-hour flight because I could get a red eye. And I would go with this hope because Brittany and I were developing a relationship, so I had this idea that she would come and pick me up. So we would sneak in, tell nobody, because I had all of 24 hours there. And yes, that is really stupid to travel 17 hours for about a 28-hour visit to jump back on a plane to make it back for school across the country. But I knew I had that moment with her because I had this hope in Brittany. Now just think, when we disconnect hope from a person, from an object, it'd be almost like me jumping on that plane, except when I get off the plane, grab my baggage, come outside, I see a random girl by a car and go and just grab her and like, thank you for picking me up. And she screams naturally, like, who are you? Like, no, I was hopeful. and you're here. And that's generally how we can talk about hope within our spirituality, and it becomes that awkward moment of you grabbing a stranger outside the tarmac and wondering, why don't you love me? So hope as relational knowledge is born out of relationship rather than a despair born at a distance. Because I have hope in Brittany picking me up because I have known her. We have had relationship. She agreed to pick me up. That's a big part of it. And that's the same way we work within the church. So as we step into the season of hope, what is the Christian hope? It looks like that, having hope in an object, in a person, in something close that you get to know. Because hope born that way is life-giving. Hope at a distance because you have nothing else around only brings more despair. You want to experience hope in the Christmas season, get closer to people. And so I would actually like, because in this moment, the passage we're going to read is part of the calendar out of Romans, I would like to hit the lights. Because I want you to experience some of the language used, but as full embodied, a tangible, the way it's written, the same way we have the candles. I know it's really dark, but I have all the lights, so we're good. So, my dear family, this is my appeal to you by the mercies of God. Offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. Worship like this brings your mind into line with God's. This is all the more important because you know what time it is. The hour has come for you to awake from sleep. The night is nearly over. The day is almost here. So let's put aside the works of darkness. Let us put on the armor of light. Let us put on the Lord Jesus, the Messiah. Notice that transition. In the text, it says, darkness or nighttime's progressing, and we see that morning is drawing near. If you've ever had to work a shift, or it's not as hard to imagine here since morning's now start at like 9 when the sun rises. But what Paul's alluding to is that something has happened within Jesus' movement that would be like the first light breaking over the hill in the east. It's barely noticeable. You see a blue line rising above the mountains. But in that line of light, in that light break of day, we know the darkness is progressing, but dawn is arriving. He said, that's where we see our hope. In that distant light stretched over a hill, because we realize what Jesus had done. But we celebrate that hope of the first light, and we live in anticipation of the noonday. Because every morning that you've been alive, you've seen the sun rise in the east with that light break, whether you're awake for it or not. And you anticipated what you could do at noon. You anticipated what you can do when full light came, which gave you the ability to step into the rest of your life. And that is what this sense is. That's why we can light a candle of hope. And having the darkness sit on us a little bit, it's this moment. There's anticipation. There's energy in that moment because you realize everything that is beautiful is in front of you. It's about to happen, and you can wait on it. You can expect it. I won't make you sit in this darkness for the whole time so we can turn the lights back up, but I wanted you to feel this moment, where it's dark, but you can see something's lit, where you can have that hope of the expected light. And so Romans 13, what we read at the last part of that was Romans 13, 11 to 14. If we could put that verse up. Oh, that's what that is? Awesome. I'll take that off next time. There's not a whole lot I can do about that.
That's okay. It's all good.
If you had tape, that'd be awesome. I'll tape that thing up. I'll look dumb. So, ignore this part. Romans 13, 11 to 14. It says, awake, sleepers, for dawn is approaching. The hope of the new day is realized as a people. And it calls us to be dressed in. Good. They are really bringing tape. This is awesome. Let's do this. Oh, it's all good, man. This is part of light. You change the things you forget to do.
That's a sweet earring.
Oh, thank you.
Wow.
You know what? That works.
Make it look more natural.
Did I match my skin tone? Is it just a... No, thank you. I always like impromptu beauty tips. So when we're stepping into Romans 13, 11 to 14, and we're seeing this moment that Paul's calling for, and he has that light of the new day, and if we threw it up, if I turn it this way, I'll see that too. I'd actually like to read it from this translation. I'm sorry for telling you guys a different translation, but this one's not online anyways. But leave the verse up just because I would like this in your mind as we go through. Which it says, "This is all the more important because you know what time it is. The hour has come for you to wake up from sleep. Our salvation, you see, is nearer now than it was first we came to faith. The night is nearly over. The day is almost here. So let us put off the works of darkness and put on the armor of light. Let's behave appropriately as in the daytime, not in wild parties, drunkenness, not in orgies and shameless immorality, not in bad tempers and jealousy. Instead, put on the Lord Jesus, the Messiah." Now, in that first stance, where if you go back to 11, it says, "And do this because," that's one word, and it's supposed to put in your mind an argument of everything that precedes it. So when we talk about the new day, what does it look like? When I say our hope is in a people, our hope is in a person, the reason why I want that close language for you is because of that phrase, which comes from one word that says the argument leading up to this point, the reason why we can talk about the dawn breaking, the noonday coming, that we put on light, we close ourselves, is because of the one word. But what does it point to? It points to chapter 12. So what does the new day look like? If you go to chapter 12, verse 4, this is the new day. Which he says, "As in one body, we have many limbs and organs, you see, and all the parts have different functions. So we, many as we are one body in the Messiah, and individually, we belong to one another. Well then, we have gifts that differ in accordance with the grace that has been given to us. We must use them appropriately. If it is prophecy, we must prophesy within the works of our faith. If it is serving, we must work at our serving, in teaching, at our teaching, if exhortation, at our exhortations, if giving, with generosity, if leading, with energy, if doing acts of kindness, with cheerfulness. Love must be real. Hate what is evil. Stick fast to what is good. Be truly affectionate to one another, showing love for one another. Compete with each other in giving mutual respect. Don't get tired of working hard, but on fire with the Spirit. Work as a slave for the Lord. Celebrate your hope. Be patient in suffering. Give constant energy to prayer. Contribute to the needs of God's people. Make sure you are hospitable to strangers." And if we skip a little bit just to get to our section, because it goes more, it says, "Love your neighbor as yourself, because love does no wrong to its neighbor. So love is the fulfillment of the law. And this is all the more important, because you know what time it is." So what is this new day dawning? If you notice the draw to it, is that hope is found in a people. This new day is dawning as we move towards each other. And as the next slide will say, that we become hope as a people actively present. So in all the shuffling and all the mayhem and all the movements that have happened, if you're wanting to see us as a community reach the vision that we're hoping to have of being a Jesus-centered people, creating gracious space through generous love, it's this, that we find hope in a person, Jesus, that's the centered part, and we become hope as a people. See, we have hope and we become hope. It's not a one stop. We realize something, we move into something. We have hope and we become hope as we become active with each other. Just like when I was first dating Brittany, it would have been foolish to have hope in something if I did not know her. In knowing her, I could have hope that she would show up. And in that part to where it says the redrawn family lines, where it says, if you have a gift, use it for the community. If you teach, if you exhort, if you're generous, if you're kind, if you have a home to open up, use it to welcome each other. That follows where Paul was just saying that there were wild and cultivated trees that God blended together to make one tree. And a tree is always a metaphor for Israel. So when it's talking about what are we doing, it's actually saying these family lines, this blending, this coming together is actually something of different species of trees that would never naturally be together. Because we gather around Jesus, we get to see this moment, and that's what we're celebrating. So if you're uncomfortable, if you think people are weird, if you wonder why I have earrings that have to be taped up, good for you. If I do not make you uncomfortable at some point, you don't know me. I'm strange. That's just what it is. And it's that movement towards each other, though. That's what defines our hope, and that's actually how we discover our hope. And the reason I say we, because sometimes we read these passages, and when it says clothe yourself, because yourself for us can be singular or plural. So, you know, when you say dress yourself, you're not thinking the entire church comes together and starts pulling your pants up. That could be an invasion of space and breaking boundaries. But in these ones, it actually uses a term that's for getting dressed, for wrapping yourself around. And it uses it twice, which is in Romans 13, 12, and 14. And it matches it. It says, the darkness is progressing. And then in the next sentence fragment, it says, now put away darkness. And then following the darkness progressing, it says, the day is drawing near. It's dawn. You're seeing that light. It said, therefore, clothe yourself in light. And towards the end of that paragraph, it says, clothe yourself in Jesus. But the clothe yourself are plural statements. This is something we can only do together. It is not you on your way to heaven. Sorry. It's you on your way here. To look around here, to see the people, to see the group, to see the community, and say, becoming a part of this is actually part of me understanding what Jesus' hope was or what my hope in Jesus is. And that as I move towards that, as I understand, we clothe ourselves in light, we clothe ourselves in Jesus, then I realize what Paul was saying a few verses ago, where he said, although we are many members, we belong one to another. Which at least for me, it gives me some comfort, because there's sometimes I don't understand what other Christians are saying. Their experience, their story, although beautiful, doesn't resonate with me. But it's okay, because would a hand understand a foot? Would a kidney know what the eye experiences? No. But that's why you need each organ, each part of a body to function. It's not about silencing a voice you don't understand. It's about learning to function and live together in such a way that it's life-giving. Now, that's easy to say, like crazy easy to say, in the same way that we say, we are family, yay, now let's do lunch separately. To agree to these things, everyone would agree. In the same way we say, we should love everyone. And then you meet a person who says, we should love everyone. You're like, you're a jerk. Like, that's really not loving. It's those moments. It gets messy. So that is the third point that we're going to be wrapping up now, just because I'd like us to be able to step into communion in such a way as a community. Learning to be hope will get messy. And has anyone heard of Cornel West? If you haven't, he's awesome. He is a social worker and writer academic in the States. He writes for social justice, social issues, but he had a story in his book, Living and Loving Out Loud, that highlights this perfectly, because no one would ever want to say races are not equal, because we see ourselves as beyond that. But stepping into a place to where all people are equal is really messy. And so just after the Jim Crow segregation laws were lifted in the States, Cornel West was about 12 years old, living in Sacramento, California. And his dad said, let's move. And this completely shocked Cornel West when he says in the book, he said, it it broke his world because the community he lived in was a tight-knit community to where they would have block parties and every house would bring food. And if you weren't at one person's house playing in their garage, they could list five others you would go to. He said it was such a close-knit, positive, and whole community that he was astonished his dad would say, let's leave, especially since his dad also held prominence in the community. It's like, Dad, why would we leave my friends? Why would we leave my neighborhood? Why would we go there and live with the white people who don't want us? And his dad said, segregation has been lifted. It's not illegal anymore. But if we stay in our own neighborhoods, it'll always be the law of the land. Because unless we intentionally move into somebody else's neighborhood to become a part of their community, we'll always be separated. And that's where it got messy. Because then he moved into the neighborhood, and, you know, this was a time when you expected to get baskets from your friends or the neighbors if you just moved in to say, welcome to the neighborhood. He said the only thing he saw was his dad smile and wave and people run in their house when they saw him, because he was the first black man to own a house in that neighborhood ever. And that actually got Cornel West, in his early teens, impulsive moment, getting upset. He said, okay, Dad, we have friends. Let's call them. We'll show up in force and show them they're not messing with one family. We have a whole community. His dad said, no, that's not the way. We don't want to frighten people. We want to become part of them. So he made gift baskets, went to each of his neighbors, handed them a basket, and just said, hi, I'm Mr. West. We're new to the neighborhood and just want to introduce ourselves and say, we would love to be able to join this community. And Cornel West describes that moment as the whole community breaking. Because they went from distant strangers who were scared of each other to suddenly they were apart, they were invited to things. He said it was slow, it was painful, it was really awkward, but it was the way in. And I'd say for ourselves, we can talk about being Jesus-centered, gracious-based, loving, and that is easy. That's the fun part. That's where you nuance a comma somewhere in a sentence and say, perfect, I can turn that in. But this is where it gets messy. Because like West, Paul points us to embody hope by purposely blending with the trees that are not naturally us, with the families that are not our bloodline. And this is not a matter of converting somebody. This is the end result of in view of God's mercies mentioned in 12:1. Like Paul, or like West, our good intentions and honest attempts at blending will be misunderstood. They will create weird space. However, that is the only way forward to becoming hope. So over this next season, as we contemplate what does it have hope in action, how does it incarnate through love, joy, and peace, I'd actually say invite people to this. If you want a series all year to invite people to, at least for the rest of this year, I say invite people to this because we're going to be going over what is the core of not only our tradition, but our long, beautiful story, like the poem said in the beginning. And we're going to contemplate, and we're going to dream, and we're going to speak of a reality that could only happen as we intentionally move forward and intentionally engage with each other. It'll be awkward. It'll bring weird moments. It'll bring misunderstandings that you then have to have the awkward conversation of, did you mean this? But that's what our hope is. We can find hope in Jesus as we become hope for each other. And so in light of this, I'm going to be bringing up the person to do Eucharist. I'd say to embody this new family language and remembering God's mercy in uniting us, we're going to take communion, but rather than just dipping and then going and taking it privately, I'd say try to gather in groups of 6 to 8 of a group that's beyond your family. Because in this moment, we're going to enter into some of the ancient practice of Eucharist. And as we take it, you're looking across to the person and realizing that the hope that we found in Jesus is sitting across from us in this family defined beyond bloodlines. And that as we understand this moment, which is actually one of the more ancient ways of taking communion, we can realize the hope found in Christ.